Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. In the studio this afternoon is radiation oncologist Tia Olds. Dr. Olds practices at New York Oncology Hematology's offices in Albany and Amsterdam. Dr. Olds earned her medical degree from the Morehouse School of Medicine in Atlanta. She completed her internship at St. Vincent's Medical Center in Staten Island and completed her residency in radiation oncology at SUNY Upstate Medical University in Syracuse. She's a board-certified member of the American Society of Therapeutic Radiology and Oncology, and has recently been featured in Essence magazine for advice on cancer prevention in African Americans. Dr. Olds, welcome to the Vox Pop.
Hi, Ellen. Thank you.
To be part of today's conversation, give us a call at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WMC Vox Pop, and you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. That's being old. That's the way I would do it. Email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But right now, there's plenty of phones open, and I just want to talk to all of you. Dr. Olds, what do you do?
What do
I do? Is that a good question? What do you do?
Sure, that's a good start. So I use radiation to treat malignancies for the most part. Some benign conditions, but the overwhelming majority of things that we treat are cancers.
So any particular site in the body that you don't do? Do you brains? Do you do brains?
Yes.
And
I do.
So the big thing now is it blastomas? Is that what it is?
So glioblastomas tend to compromise the largest percentage of brain cancers for adults, yes.
And can you do anything with that?
Sure, there are a lot of treatment options. Certainly surgery is a main component of the treatment, and that can be followed often by radiation therapy as well as chemotherapy combined.
And how does it work? I mean, you aim this thing into the brain. How do you figure out where it goes?
So that is going to be based on prior imaging, diagnostic studies that have been obtained prior to diagnosis and actually developing the diagnosis.
So you might do an MRI and then use that for how to guide you.
Absolutely. MRI is one of the studies of choice when it comes to actually being able to direct the radiation therapy where it needs to go.
Now, there are some new things, new wrinkles, I think, in which there's a sort of hand-in-glove relationship between ongoing imaging while the radiology is being done. Is that right?
So, yes. Part of the goal of radiation therapy is to make sure the radiation is being directed where it's going to provide the most benefit and minimize toxicity. So being able to image the area in question prior to treatment and during treatment is certainly going to be the most advantageous to achieve those goals.
What about prostate?
Actually, the same concept. You want to make sure that you're treating the prostate or other areas involved in the malignancy appropriately, and being able to image them prior to and during treatment is going to be critical.
Interesting. Is there one site when you hear, okay, this patient's coming in with is there one site where you say, okay, this is a good one because I think we can really help here?
I would honestly say that that's the case for the majority of
really?
Malignancies that we come in contact with.
Well, that's great, I don't know. I mean, if we're all here, we want to know what your chances of success are if you have, for example, a blastoma or something like that. Is it after 5 years? What can we expect?
So that's going to depend largely on the size of the tumor when it's diagnosed, how successful or extensive the surgical resection was. Survival is going to be better if you've had a more thorough surgical resection. Following that with radiation therapy and combined chemotherapy are certainly going to increase your chances of being disease-free. But glioblastomas are tough brain cancers to treat.
Sure.
So that's something that we continue to try to improve upon, and we're really going to be focused moving in the future with individualized therapies that are going to be biologically based on the particular cancer involved, and I mean individual cancers. So person A perhaps having a slightly different treatment than person B based on those biologic markers for that particular type of cancer.
Wow. We'll go to Joanna in Western Mass. Joanna, thanks for your patience. What's up?
Hi, thank you very much. I have a question about, is there any correlation between intensive radiation for whole torso situations? I know someone well who had 54 gray radiation over 6 weeks a number of years ago, and that person lost 2 inches of height, and also their teeth really began to kind of soften and crumble. And I just wondered about the dental aspect of this. Is there any literature on the correlation between radiation and tooth degradation, I guess I'd say.
So I'll answer the first part of your question with regard to the height loss. That has a lot to do when the radiation therapy is delivered in the person's maturity phase. So if they're prepubescent, certainly radiation therapy to certain segments of the vertebral column can decrease what we call sitting height. So if she had radiation as a child, that certainly could be the explanation. When it comes to dental changes from radiation therapy, that's going to be largely dependent upon what's actually treated. Are you talking about all of the teeth that are just in the lower jaw, the upper jaw?
The radiation was actually to the torso, but it was for, you know, intestinal cancer, and it was it had involved all lymph nodes, so that there was a lot of radiation.
So unless those teeth were directly within the radiation field, any changes to them would not be related to the radiation therapy.
Okay, thank you very much. Mm.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
Thanks a lot. I've lost 2 inches also, and I didn't have radiation. Okay, we're now going to go to Carlene, but not before I give 1-800-348-2551. Go ahead, Carlene.
Hi, I just missed part of the doctor's comments on glioblastoma, and that's why I'm calling. My nephew has 3 tumors. He's been diagnosed with glioblastoma, and he's stage 4. Is there anything at all that can be done? His doctor says no.
Does that mean that he is not eligible for any type of surgical resection?
No, nothing surgical. I think they did give him, and I apologize, I don't remember if it was, I believe it was radiation mm-hmm. treatments, but they gave him a diagnosis of maximum of 2 years to live.
Okay, all right. So that would suggest his tumors are located in parts of the brain that are just not amenable to surgery, because the side effects from the surgery would probably be a lot more detrimental than the disease itself. He would have then gotten radiation therapy combined with chemotherapy as definitive treatment.
Okay.
So that sounds fairly standard. That sounds fairly standard, yes. He may be eligible for some ongoing protocols depending on where he lives, and that's certainly something I would suggest that he explore.
So doctor, are we at a point now where things are happening? In other words, where we taking a look at genes and gene splicing and other things that may give hope to somebody like this?
Yes. So that's something that's being actively explored in a multitude of malignancies, because we're understanding with every passing day, truthfully, that there are genetic abnormalities that can be responsible for the development of these cancers. And likewise, the treatment itself could be directed at these genetic mutations.
Mm. Carlene, good luck, and thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Yes,
good luck to him. Thank you.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. But I want to just talk to you all for a moment. This is an opportunity. At the end of the show, you're going to say, I should have called, and you didn't. And that's on you. So 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And by the way, at the end of the show, you won't get in, because there'll be so many people on the air. Take it away, Zach.
Support comes from Ichiban Japanese and Chinese Restaurant, Central Avenue, Albany, serving hibachi dinners, sushi, sashimi, curry soups, Thai, and entrees. offering daily specials 518-432-0358. Bassett Healthcare Network, providing healthcare services across central New York. We see people, not patients. Bassett.org. Capital Wine, corner of State and Lark Streets in the heart of Albany, offering local, domestic, and international wines, spirits, and special orders. Tastings Fridays, 6 to 9. CapitalWineAlbany.com. Albany Realty Group, a local woman-owned real estate company since 2003, educating and counseling sellers and buyers throughout the real estate transaction. AlbanyRealtyGroup.com. And from the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, announcing their updated website with more information about membership, grants, and loans, so our past has a future. PreserveNYS.org.
And we are back. Thank you so much, Zachary, for bringing us back. Appreciate that very much. That's Mr. Zachary Molloy, who is our ace engineer. Okay, so let's go now, if we can, to Karen in Delmore. All right, Karen, you're on with Dr. Olds.
Hi. I just tuned in, and I heard you talking about certain cancers associated with genetics, and there's a lot of new research coming out.
Right.
And I just, I did just find out that I do have the MTHFR mutation, and my mother actually has both the MTHFR mutations. And I just didn't know, what is coming out in hard science. I'm definitely more into natural medicine, and I'm hearing a lot, you know, through the MTHFR.net and the things associated and the things I need to do to avoid, such as, you know, the folic acid and avoiding enriched and fortified foods and things like that. What's coming out sort of in the hard science community about the links with MTHFR and certain disease?
So I am not really well, I'm not an expert in a lot of the genetic abnormalities. So that's going to be a very specific question, and I certainly hope that you have already obtained some of the genetic counseling regarding your syndrome, and I assume that's the case, yes?
It really hasn't manifested itself too deeply. We've been able to catch it with, you know, strange occurrences such as metabolizing anesthesia very quickly,
mm-hmm.
Inability to process folic acid. So before getting pregnant, my doctor put me on folic acid and mm-hmm. my ear just exploded, feeling like, you know, I would have an ear infection, but I stopped the folic acid. So it's just about knowing the things to avoid. So I personally haven't manifested in, you know, any kind of a syndrome or a symptom mm-hmm. yet. I think I'm catching it early enough. But my mm-hmm. mother, on the other hand, you know, we're kind of watching some things that she's going through, and she just now found out. So I was just curious, you know, what you know about it and thing, you know. Again, like I said, a lot of my information is coming more from the natural medicine world,
mm-hmm.
and I was curious what may be coming out and about, because I have been told that there is a lot more research being done on this specific mutation.
So, doctor, if you could you tell us a little bit about some of these mutations, both for breast cancer and some of the others, about what people can, why it's so important to know about this?
So, again, we're just kind of finding out more and more about some of the syndromes that may be predisposed to develop malignancies at different ages. We're finding different clusters of these mutations and kind of assigning names to them and kind of characterizing them as syndromes based on common and shared symptoms and clinical findings. It is constantly evolving because for all the mutations we know that cause breast cancer, for instance, the BRCA1 and 2 being the biggest mutations that we know about. Currently, we know there are other ones. We just haven't been able to name them yet. So it's constantly evolving. It's a matter of putting all the pieces together and making sense of it, coming up with patterns so that you can then understand what to expect from the illness and how to prevent the development of cancers, obviously. That's my focus, but also the other sequelae that can be very problematic and symptomatic.
How important is this as a radiologist, as an oncologist, mm-hmm. is it for you to understand about what is causing the cancer in the patient?
So it's pretty important for me. I'm a little bit more downstream than, say, a medical oncologist, because by the time I've actually met someone, they've actually been diagnosed with whatever syndrome or whatever mutation. So they've probably already gone through some of the screening things that actually need to take place. By the time I'm seeing them, they've already been diagnosed with a particular malignancy or disease condition. But it's certainly important to understand those syndromes, because there's some people that perhaps should not be irradiated because of their syndrome, because they could be more predisposed to develop increased toxicity as a consequence of that syndrome or mutation.
Interesting. Very interesting. Okay, Karen, thank you for your call. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll go to Stacy in Oneonta. Okay, Stacy, go ahead.
Hi, I had a question. A couple years back, probably about 8 years ago, my mother was diagnosed with a non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and it was discovered accidentally through a surgery in her intestines. She had a reoccurrence. She went through chemo and was fine for about 6 years, and then she had a reoccurrence. Did chemo again, and she seems to be cancer-free. My question is, how is that transferred? Is this something that my siblings and I should watch out for? And if so, how do we check for symptoms and signs of this?
So do you have any other family history of other cancers?
Not on my mother's side of the family, no.
Okay. So you kind of want to take this time to look at family history and kind of do a little bit of a crude kind of family tree mapping. See if you have family members on either side, mother or father's side, with cancers, and see if that starts to bring up any flags for you. And what I mean by that is take that information to your primary care provider and sit down. If you start to see that there is a case of or someone that's diagnosed with cancer in every generation of your family, multiple cancers diagnosed within generations of your family, then you may want to talk about whether or not hereditary risk assessment is something that should be explored. Certainly the majority of cancers are sporadic, meaning that they don't have an actual familial basis, meaning you don't necessarily expect them to continue to occur in other family members. Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma is actually fairly common when it comes to lymphomas happening in the adult age setting. I don't know what subtype your mother had, but just considering that individually, I don't know that that's something that you have to be concerned about is going to be transmitted familially, but that's certainly something that's part of your medical history because it's her medical history, and you want to be attentive and make sure that you're going for your annual physical examinations. Just an increased awareness, I think, at this point is warranted.
So will awareness for Stacy or her relatives, can it pay off? In other words, what's the payoff for somebody who does look into it? Is there anything that can be done about this?
So it certainly depends on what's actually discovered. I think having an awareness of your family history and just knowing that there are malignancies that can involve your lymphatic system or other organs and that has actually occurred is just your radar is on. So you're maybe going to be a little bit more attentive if you find a lump or a bump somewhere because, one, you've already been alerted that this has happened to someone else in your family. I think that in itself can be a payoff. Mm. We tend to be so focused on everything else in our lives and other family members and friends and making sure that we're taking care of them. We can sometimes neglect our own health and dismiss something as being non-problematic when maybe it is.
So radiological oncology, we've talked about some of the internal things, the glioblastoma and some of the others. But suppose somebody has, something on the arm. Do you do that?
So we certainly do treat skin cancers. Majority of skin cancers are removed surgically, and usually that's all you have to actually be concerned about. The most commonly occurring cancer is skin cancer in general. That beats lung and breast and prostate by far. So we do see people in situations in which perhaps they've had a skin cancer that's been removed and it keeps recurring. Or they have a cancer of the skin that's in a place that is really not amenable to surgery without significant disfigurement, or perhaps having that area removed with surgery would require a skin graft. In older patients, that may not be a good idea because the vascularity of that area may be compromised and a skin graft may not take as well. So radiation is a non-invasive option.
Mm-hmm. Stacy, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Lots of free phones. Let's go to Carol in Delmar. Carol, you're on.
Hi. I was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. I had a tumor on my spine between the vertebrae 12, T11 and 12. The doctor took out the tumor. It resulted in having 4 vertebrae fused. I have a rod in my back now, and he was not able to resect the entire tumor. Some of it was actually inside my vertebrae, like a corkscrew, and some of it was coming from outside the vertebrae. It's a, I forget, it's a kind of lymphoma that's not associated with endo, kind of just on its own. A PET scan revealed that I had no other lymphoma elsewhere in the body, and I'm slated to have radiation on the spine. And I had a couple of concerns. One is radiating on my spinal cord concerns me. And I've also read that when you radiate by bone and by metal, and I have a titanium rod now, that it'll bounce off and radiate healthy tissue in other areas of my body. So I wanted to ask you about the unintended consequences of radiation on my spinal cord, and also if there were any alternative supplements, a regimen of some kind that would mitigate the side effects of radiation.
So I'll start with the first issue in terms of the radiation dose to the spinal cord and being concerned about that, and certainly you have every right to be concerned. Fortunately, the dose of radiation that would be required for your lymphoma, and again, I don't know your specific subtype.
It's a low-grade, B-cell low-grade.
Okay. So that's actually something that requires a fairly low dose of radiation therapy, and certainly far below what we know to be the threshold of dose that the spinal cord can safely receive. So even though the spinal cord is going to receive some radiation, that should not be enough to be of clinical concern, meaning you shouldn't have side effects that are significant related to that amount of radiation to the spinal cord. So that should give you some reassurance.
About what number gray?
So I will defer to your radiation oncologist that's going to be treating you, because it's a little bit of a range there, but certainly that falls within what we consider a low dose of radiation therapy. When it comes to what's going to happen with the radiation therapy and the internal titanium devices you have in place, that's something that we understand as being internal scatter, and there's really nothing you can do about that. You have internal scatter when any part of your body is irradiated, actually. We're talking about something that represents a fairly small percentage of radiation scatter, and that scatter is fairly limited to the adjacent areas. Again, that amount of radiation dose is going to be fairly small and should be of very little consequence to surrounding tissues.
Mm-hmm. And the other question was, I have been reading about alternative strategies for cancer patients. A book by Dr. Blaylock, and he recommends a regimen of supplements to counteract the effects of radiation, including antioxidants and in high doses. And I didn't know if you had any familiar with complementary medicine with regard to radiation.
Okay. So I'm not familiar with his book, but the traditional teaching for radiation therapy and its administration in conjunction with antioxidants is that the antioxidants normally are fantastic because they're clearing out free radicals, free oxygen radicals, which generally will cause cellular damage. When you're getting radiation therapy, however, those oxygen radicals are actually being used to destroy the DNA of the cancer cells. So if you take a high amount of antioxidants during radiation therapy, you're actually potentially going to counteract one of the basic mechanisms of how it works. So generally, we actually recommend that you don't take high levels of antioxidants during radiation therapy for that reason.
Yeah, it's I know that's standard, and just this book that I've been reading by, he's an MD, neurosurgeon, a cancer doctor, and he is very particular and precise about what to take in what dosage, and he said it actually will protect the healthy tissue and increase the effectiveness of radiation on the cancer cells. And it's only one book, and that's all I have to look at, but anyway, that's what I read.
I guess at that, you know, with that, I would question the source for the information. If he's actually referenced any studies, I would look at those studies to see mm-hmm. how well they were designed. Are those in vivo studies, meaning was that actually performed in live tissue? Was it in vitro, meaning it's in a test tube? Were these actual patient participants that they actually take samples from tumors prior to radiation therapy, after radiation therapy, with and without the antioxidants? Because that's what's going to matter in terms of making that recommendation. It needs to be based on data. So I would question that, and if there are references, I would look them up just so you get some mm-hmm. understanding whether or not that's legitimate.
Well, I'll do that. And aside from the antioxidants, are there any other suggestions for dealing with the effects of radiation? I understand there'll be fatigue and things like that. And is there any other suggestions for what to do while you're having radiation to protect yourself?
So those are going to be pretty specific for the area that's being treated, and certainly your radiation oncology team will go over those specifics for you. But having a balanced, well-balanced diet, making sure to get enough rest while you're undergoing treatment, and just paying attention to the skin within the area that's being treated, making sure that's healthy, that you're being gentle with it, those are kind of general recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
Carol, okay. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it very much.
Okay. Thank you very
Thank you.
Much.
All right. Anybody who calls now is guaranteed to get on to get a spot. So 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can send us an email like this one from Melissa. What are your thoughts on the recent announcement by the WHO that cured meats and red meat cause cancer? Why is this?
So I'm not familiar with the specifics of the recent information that you're stating. We certainly have data to support that diets that are heavy in saturated fat, animal fats, and low in foods that have antioxidants and minerals and vitamins tend to be at risk for certain malignancy, particularly colon cancer and some other cancers as well. So while I'm not familiar with the specific that you're mentioning from the WHO, certainly we do have some data to suggest that a healthier diet, higher in fresh fruits and grains, lower in saturated fat in general is a better diet and may decrease our risk for development of some malignancies.
And in fact, that was this morning. We talked about it on the roundtable on the panel, but it's a very new study. Yum. Thank you very much. Okay. On that, we're gonna be taking a break in just a minute. All four out of the five phones are now ringing. I told you that was going to happen. We'll go to somebody in Long Meadow. Dick. Okay, in Long Meadow, let's go. Dick in Long Meadow, you're on.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The reason I'm calling is there's a new class of drugs, Bristol Myers and Merck and other companies are coming out with. Some are on the market now, and they're very successful. They're called immuno-oncology drugs. And Jimmy Carter is getting them right now. The first indications the FDA gave was for melanoma, and he's getting one now. But it's a new class of drugs. A lot of lung cancer, stage 4 lung cancer, people have survived in clinical trials. And I was just wondering if the doctor would care to comment on any of these new immuno-oncology drugs.
Dr. Olds?
So these are kind of pushing toward the forefront of where medicine is being directed, in particular cancer medicine. When we look at individualized therapies, instead of looking at systemic drugs that can penetrate multiple organ systems and while they treat the actual primary malignancy, tend to result in a lot of side effects in normal tissues, the new immuno-oncology drugs are looking to focus directly on the malignancy at hand and being targeted, or rather targeting the malignancy based on certain markers that the malignancy itself has. That's how these drugs in general work. So that is really the next step in terms of treatment. If I may, New York
Certainly
Oncology,
may.
Thank you. New York Oncology Hematology has actually participated in multiple studies, and we've actually been at least partly involved in the development of 30 new drugs, some of which are immuno-oncology agents on the market. So this is really where we're pushing towards the next step for treatment.
I was also reading where some of these drugs are the inflammation of of infiltration of T cells into the tumor, where it, before the cancer was never recognized by T cells.
Right. So we're kind of talking about actually making those T cells antigenically aware of the malignancy, meaning that they're actually taken out. They're primed, in a sense, to be to actually recognize the malignancy at hand and then reintroduced into the system so they can then attack the malignancy itself.
Good stuff. Dick, I got to go. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay, there are three people waiting on the phone. We'll get to you in just a moment. We're going to take just seconds to go away, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Mount St. Mary College, Newburgh, offering a liberal arts education and career preparation in social services and communications. Admissions open house Sunday, November 15th at 9:30, msmc.edu. Ellis Medicine, offering treatment for people with chronic back, neck, and headache pain at the Ellis Neuroscience Center, ellismedicine.org. Clipcentric, Albany, a local video services division of Clipcentric, producing video advertisements for businesses throughout the capital region for web, mobile, and TV. Albany.clipcentric.com. NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. And from Nine Pin Cider, serving New York hard cider made from locally sourced apples. Tasting room open Wednesday through Saturday at 929 Broadway, downtown Albany. Be revolutionary. Consider the apple. NinePinCider.com.
Thank you, Zachary. You know, Dr. Olds, we have a lot of calls. We'll go as quickly as we can. We'll try to get everybody in, okay? Let's go to Henry in Clifton Park. Henry, you're on. Henry?
Yes.
Okay, you're on, Henry. Your turn.
What specifically is an antioxidant?
So it's generally a vitamin or a mineral that works to get rid of what we call free radicals within the cell. Free radicals are just kind of liberated pieces of oxygen that can cause DNA damage. So if you can actually have something that kind of counteracts those, binds them up, then you decrease the cellular damage.
Can you give me an example of one?
Yes, vitamin A, vitamin C, vitamin E, molybdenum, selenium. Those are some common antioxidants.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Henry. All right, let's go to Pat in Adams. Go ahead, Pat. You're on.
Hello. I'm 15 months out from completing radiation for breast cancer. And my question is, I elected to have the accelerated treatment. I think they called it the Canadian protocol versus the longer 36 treatments. I had 19.
Mm-hmm.
I've had some complications that involve lymphatic fluid collecting in that breast after about 3 or 4 months after the radiation finished, and it's been, you know, as I say, 15 months, and this hasn't really gone down. It seems at kind of a stable place right now, but my question is it more likely that this sort of thing would happen after the accelerated treatment versus the longer one, or is it just something that probably, you know, would have occurred anyway? And I realize you have no way of really knowing that, but I was interested in what your opinion might be.
So may I ask if you had lymph nodes removed at the time of surgery?
I did, yes. I had the upper chain of lymph nodes removed.
So generally, I'll ask you another question. Do you have swelling along the arm on that same side of the breast?
No.
Okay. So certainly you can have what we call late side effects from the radiation treatment where the breast is larger than the other breast that was treated, and that generally does resolve with time. Everyone's going to be a little bit different, perhaps. When it comes to the data supporting standard radiation therapy versus the shorter course, they really didn't see a lot in terms of differences in the shape of the breast and how it appeared after their treatment. I would say that there are going to be individual differences, so you certainly could be experiencing that accumulation of fluid that's just persistent and taking a while to resolve.
Okay, so it's not necessarily related to the accelerated treatment plan.
I certainly can't say with any definitive certainty that you wouldn't have that even with the standard course of treatment.
I see.
Thank you, Pat. Appreciate it.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Right. We'll go to Mary in Grahamsville. Okay, Mary, you're on.
Yes. I had Merkel cell carcinoma on my cheek about 27 years ago. And I had taken different tests, and they found out that I had a cyst on my kidney and one on my liver. Should I be concerned about those turning into Merkel cell? Because Roswell Park did say that sometimes the cells may spread to the internal organs later.
So there certainly is a risk of Merkel cell becoming systemic, meaning it can involve other organs beside mm-hmm. where it started on the skin. But if they found cysts on your liver and kidneys and they were fairly certain that these cysts were not malignant, there's no reason to suspect that they themselves will become malignant with time.
And what is, doctor, what is Merkel cell?
Merkel cell carcinoma is a fairly rare skin cancer. It certainly can be aggressive. And it has the ability to spread locally and also systemically. So similar to melanoma, but I think the best explanation is that it's very similar to a particular type of lung cancer that's called small cell lung cancer.
Which would you rather not have worse, melanoma or Merkel?
I would say both of them are fairly serious illnesses, and that's going to depend on stage by stage, too.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you, Mary. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yep. Still lots of free phones, 1-800-348-2551. Robert in Sheffield. Robert, you're on.
Hi, doctors. How are you? I'm about 6 months out from having radiation for cancer of the larynx, and still experiencing some real fatigue. The doctor or the oncologist had told me that radiation to the neck or the head area increases your possibility of feeling fatigue for quite some time. Is this generally something you would agree with?
So I think that would really largely depend on the area that was irradiated. Did you receive chemotherapy in addition to the radiation?
No.
Okay.
No chemo. It was to the vocal cord.
Okay. So it sounds like it was a stage one, maybe stage two cancer?
Yes.
Okay. So generally, fatigue can certainly persist sometime after the radiation therapy, but I would expect 12 to 18 months out from the radiation therapy, I would expect that to be fairly minimal for you know, low-stage cancer with a limited field of treatment.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck.
1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Now's your chance. Don't hit yourself up the side of your head this evening and say, I should have called. I could have had an answer, because you could have. And as my boy Jonas often said to me when he was growing up, it's on you, Dad. Okay, so let me ask you a question, Doc, and that is, do you ever see a day, based on the kinds of cures we're talking about now that are coming, that your skills won't be needed anymore?
Well, that would certainly be a nice thing, I suppose. I don't know what I'd do, though. That is certainly the hope when it comes to cancer. Certainly, if we can prevent it from starting, that is ideal. Much better to not have the cancer than actually have to treat it once it's been diagnosed.
If you had to go into another specialty, where would it be? What would it be? Do you have any sense of that?
I was thinking about stand-up comedy, but I'm not so sure I'd be that good at it.
Oh, you'd be very good at it, I think, based on that last on that last answer. You'd be very good on it. And do you ever worry that you're going to be, you know, sort of compromised by the amount of energy that you're using yourself? I know that you protect yourselves and you all wear badges, but does it ever occur to you that, uh-oh, we may find out later on that maybe this is not a healthy profession to be in?
So that's always a concern. I think you'd be being a little bit dishonest to say that's not something you think about. I think the risks are very low with modern radiation therapy, so that's not something that I spend any appreciable time thinking about.
Yeah, and it is extraordinary that when you're training, when you're getting into the training originally, is that your greatest risk time, or is it complacency later on?
So,
is that a too hard a question?
I'd ask you to rephrase it, actually.
Okay. You're going into your residency. It's early in your career. This, it seems to me, is when people, young people particularly, can make mistakes.
Oh, I see.
You
okay.
See, but later on, as opposed to later on, when, you know, you've done it so much that you could potentially become complacent.
So I think you're right on both ends. When you're in training, you are often in an academic center that involves a lot of different procedures, and depending on whether or not you're using live radiation sources, that's going to be more of an exposure risk, and the consequences of a mistake are going to be have larger repercussions. Certainly as you go along in your career, sometimes that can lead to complacency, and mistakes can be made at that point too. So yes to both.
Okay, so we've got a Megan. Okay, Megan, you're on. Go.
All right, so I have cancer history on both sides of family, maternal and paternal. I'm 32, and I was wondering if there's any tests that I should be getting done for genetics or anything else along that line to see if I have any predispositions.
So I would say you probably want to sit down with your primary care provider and come up with a little bit of a rough sketching of your family tree, because at that point the discussion needs to be whether or not you would benefit from familial risk assessment to see if you are at increased risk for any types of cancers.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Regan.
That's it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Okay, let's go to Hank. I guess it's Hank's or Helink in West Hurley. Okay, you're on, sir.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Okay, my concern to the doctor is that in receiving radiation treatment, what about the healthy cells that surround the cancer? How do you protect yourself from not changing them, you know, so they mutate into cancer down the line? Is there a technique gotten better, or what's the story on that?
So radiation therapy, with regard to technology, is certainly a lot better at doing that than, say, 20 years ago. We have a lot more sophistication when it comes to directing radiation therapy to the areas that it needs to go to. The radiation oncologist in charge of treating you is certainly going to be skilled at knowing what the tolerance is of the surrounding tissues, and that is critical. So those decisions would be made upfront before any radiation therapy was delivered to make sure to spare those normal close by tissues maximally.
And is there no way for you to sort of guard those close by tissues? In other words, yeah, I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
Question two. Go ahead.
So there's been some real study into that in terms of maybe some agents that can prevent normal tissue damage. And one of the agents, amifostine, was investigated extensively in hopes that this could actually decrease mouth dryness when you're treating someone with radiation therapy for head and neck cancer. And there was some information or data to support that, yes, it could be protective without compromising cancer care, but it also came with a lot of side effects, and the trade-off for many just didn't make it worth it, particularly when we talk about more advanced techniques of radiation therapy delivery.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you very much. How do you pronounce your name?
My name is Helena.
Somehow Helene. It came out a little bit differently. But thank you very much, Helena,
okay.
For calling.
Thank you.
Appreciate
thank you. Thank
it.
You.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we'll go to Art in Albany. Art in Albany, you're on.
Oh, hi. I have a question with regard to technology. I was over at the Nanoscale facility at one of their seminars that they offer and was open to the public, and saw a presentation done where they talked about nanoscale robots that could be programmed to deliver a certain medication to a certain program to a cell to deliver a certain medication and be able to do that and go out through the normal biological process. And I guess the question I have is whether that is a reality that is going to be available. And I could just imagine another question, and then I'll hang up and listen. If that would, okay, if that would make for some of the difficulties of radiation and things where they're destroying good cells and bad cells, would that make a more exacting care delivery? And just would like to know what your thoughts were on that. I know it's a little high level. I do technology in this community, so it's a high level question, but I thought it would be worth asking.
Okay, we're running out of time, so Doc, as short an answer but complete as you could do.
So I think that's a fascinating area of study. Certainly, we don't know the answers, and it's complete ability for treatment, but certainly fascinating. When it comes to radiation therapy, I actually can say I really don't know if that would be something that we could actually look forward in the short term of treatment delivery. We've actually tried radio labeling of some antibodies to treat certain lymphomas, for instance, and that was tried probably in the early 2000s. The difficulty was making sure that it actually got to the place it was supposed to go and deliver the amount of radiation it needed to safely. We ended up seeing quite a bit of bone marrow toxicity when we looked at those drugs. So there are caveats to it, but the technology is exciting.
Thank you very much, Art. All right, let's go to Lisa in Pennsylvania. Okay, Lisa, you're on.
Yes, I just was curious. I'm a cancer survivor, and I wanted to know if the doctor would be so kind as to speak to the doses of vitamin D3 as it is either helpful or not in preventing a reoccurrence of breast cancer.
So I don't know the data regarding an actual specific dose, and I would really refer that to your oncologist to get more specific regarding that.
But is D3 important?
We think D3 is important in a lot of different medical conditions, particularly with some preventative strategies for certain cancers. We're still exploring it because there's been so much of a buzz for last 5 or 6 years, but now we're really starting to understand there are some limitations to what we initially thought with the delivery of vitamin D3 in the body.
Limitation like what?
In terms of what the appropriate dose is. Are we actually giving the right doses? Are we giving too high doses?
Yep.
And how is that translating into a benefit?
Gotcha. Thank
you. Right, and also if there's a way that should it be combined with anything like A or E or that sort of thing?
I think those are excellent questions. I don't know the answer to those.
Thank you very much,
okay,
Lisa.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go very, very quickly to Sue in Cambridge. Okay, Sue, you're on.
Hi. I'm 17 years in remission from breast cancer. I'm a biologist. I'm very grateful for the treatments that took care of the cancer cells. I'm interested in your take on rebuilding immunity.
So congratulations on your survivorship. Rebuilding your immunity is certainly a complex process, but I think the basic tenets are going to be making sure you're having a balanced diet, high in high grains and fiber, decreasing saturated fat, increased physical activity at least several times a week. I think those are the basic building blocks in terms of increasing your immunity.
And how do we know that what physical activity does? I ask in a self-satisfied way.
Self-satisfied way. Yeah. So it reflects multiple organ systems from vascular relaxation, meaning that you're decreasing blood pressure, to increasing your overall immunologic function. We know that 30 minutes of sustained activity is just as good as 3 separate 10-minute intervals of sustained activity. That's been well documented. Even though we don't have an exact causation with regard to cancer, we know that increasing physical activity in most situations does improve outlook.
Is there such a thing as too much physical activity?
Oh, there's such a thing as too much of any and everything.
Uh-huh.
So if it's starting to become stressful, resulting in physical injury or other detriments, then obviously you need to pull back.
Well, I was actually thinking from cancer point of view.
Not that I am aware of, but...
Yeah.
I would think a caveat to that is if you're taking a lot of supplements, you may actually be diffusing the benefits of exercise because you're introducing substances in your body that we don't really necessarily know what they are because the FDA does not regulate vitamins or supplements.
Well, thank you very much for that. Okay. A very big apology to Sue in Cambridge, who we're not going to be able to get to today. I'm so sorry about that. And thank everybody who called in. We had one email who said, to the lady who had talked about, or to the guy who talked about throat cancer, did they examine you for thyroid? I'm quite sure they probably did, but it's very
important. That's pretty standard to actually get a thyroid panel prior to the treatment.
Right. Tia Olds, Dr. Tia Olds, thank you so much for joining us today. You were terrific. You're so smart. Support for Medical Monday comes from Nathan Litauer Hospital, Gloversville, New York, now offering new MRI technology with silent MRI scans and feet-first exams, NLH.org. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer, as mentioned, is the great Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Joe Makowitz. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Alan Shartok. On tomorrow's program, it's an open forum. Stay tuned now for a news update.